Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Lynn Elmore, and you're listening to The Jake Brown Show.
And welcome to The Jake Brown Show on Radio.com, iTunes, and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter at Jake Brown Radio and Jake Brown Show. Joining us now, you know, if you know, my brother went to Maryland. I'm a big Terps fan. Well, I was when he was there in the Grievous days, and I always liked that Juan Dixon team that won the championship, and a guy who had a successful run there, an All-American at Maryland, and now he's a Fox Sports college basketball analyst. Len Elmore joins the show right now. Len, I know you're calling to your Terps in Minnesota tomorrow. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
And we had about 20 technical problems before this, so Len needs a cup of coffee to try and deal with me right now, because these studios are the end is near. This is the final week, and finally we got it to work. I want to start with Trae Young, because you've seen the ups of Trae Young, you've seen the downs of him. Last night, 8 turnovers in the first half, 12 total, the most in a game in Big 12 history, and he's got the highest turnover per game margin, 5.2, in the last 10 seasons in Division I. But he's shown us the signs that he can be the number one pick, and he could drop 40 and make 10 threes. What is your outlook, Len, on Trae Young so far?
Well, I mean, everybody wants to, you know, anoint the first. Everybody wants to anoint the new it young man. And I would say that, you know, to me, the jury is still out. We know he is a tremendous, tremendous offensive player. Right now, there's a lot of reliance on him to carry the offensive load for Oklahoma, and that includes running plays, executing, as well as scoring. And that's a lot for an 18-year-old, for a freshman with limited experience right now. And he's going to get better given the opportunity. He's going to get better with better players around him, and he's going to probably get better when he doesn't have the heavy burden of responsibility that he's carrying right now. I think what Lon Kruger is trying to do is trying to give him his freedom, something probably promised Trae and his father when he signed to go to Oklahoma. But by the same token, you know, Lon, who was a pretty stellar guard in his day, is probably going to try to give him, impart to him, some play discipline. And when I say play discipline, to recognize there are other guys on the floor right now. You don't have to do it all by yourself, that you can move the ball, you can move without it. You know, my whole thing with point guards is, you know, you push the ball up the floor and explore the possibilities. If you have an advantage opportunity, you take it. If not, then during the shot clock, you run your plays and get other people involved. And maybe if there's an opportunity for you, you take it. But when the shot clock gets to 10 or under, it's up to the point guard to create for himself and others. And I think if you follow those three rules, I think you probably have more game discipline, and, you know, hopefully we'll see Young get into that.
And Trae averaging just under 30-10 a game, just under a double-double. So when you look at his overall game, I mean, what do you improve upon? Because you see the guy can score an electric rate, but the turnovers do alarm you. So I know you said more of getting it to your teammates, but what does he have to change in order to get that turnover number down?
Again, he's got to sometimes give up the ball and not try to make the last pass. You know, people, we can throw out numbers 30-10 and say that's marvelous, but you got to look behind those numbers as well. You know, you look at his usage rate, you look at the number of shots per game he's taken, his field goal percentage, true field goal percentage. And again, you look at the assist turnover ratio, and, you know, when you're going 10 assists, but you're turning it over 6-7 times, that's not attractive. And again, he's a terrific player, but other people have to be involved to take that pressure off him, because what's happening now is teams are loading up on him, and he's still trying to make the final play. As I said, when you get better teammates, more quality and more skilled teammates, I think that pressure is reduced.
What team in the nation, Len, has surprised you thus far? For me, a couple examples. I mean, Arizona State and Purdue have both been extraordinary. Who in your mind has shocked you the most so far halfway through the season?
Well, I mean, I certainly would add Purdue in that mix. I mean, being ranked number 3 in the nation right now, I thought they were going to be a strong team, but losing Swanigan, among others, you know, I didn't think that they would be able to graduate to this level. So, you know, they're a surprise. Obviously, Oklahoma certainly is a surprise as well. You know, a lot of Big 12 teams, Texas Tech, I didn't think they're a top 10 team at the beginning of the season. Who else can I talk about? To TCU, Jamie Dixon's team, they're surprising. And Ohio State, Chris Holtmann just got there. And, you know, this is supposedly, kind of a retooling year for Ohio State, and they haven't had a great deal of success under Tad Motto over the last couple of years, but they're ranked in the top 25. So, you know, among others, they're pretty tough. Auburn is another team that has surprised me a little bit. This is college basketball, and, you know, the rankings are a snapshot. What you see today, as we saw about a month ago, what you saw a month ago, you certainly aren't seeing it today. And what you see today, you're probably not going to see this same makeup next month. But, that's the beauty of this game.
When do you truly evaluate a team and how good they are? Is it February after you've seen some conference games? Is it now? What point of the season is it?
I think it's mid-February when coaches try to start getting teams on a run. You want to go in to the NCAA tournament, actually your conference tournament, you want to go in with momentum. People say, well, that doesn't mean anything. But I think for the most part it does. Every once in a while you have an anomaly of teams that, you know, lose some games, consecutive games, and suddenly they awaken during their conference tournament. But for the most part, I think mid-February you're going to start telling whether or not a team has the chops to do something going forward. So, you know, I'm not sure if in fact you can really analyze and evaluate teams right now, because they're still, you know, trying to find themselves and still trying to find rotations, and others are trying to recover or adjust from injuries.
Len Elmore, college basketball analyst, joining us with Fox, formerly with ESPN. Do you miss the ESPN days at all?
Not really. I mean, I missed, I had a lot of friends over there, and I enjoyed the coverage that I did, whether it was the American Athletic Conference or there was the ACC. But I have some friends who were formerly with ESPN that are now producing games and calling games for Fox as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the nature of the business. I understand that. Sometimes you get too old and you get too expensive for some of these groups. They want younger guys coming in. I don't see that, and they can't say that because that would be against the law. It'd be discriminatory. But from the standpoint of payment, maybe making too much money for, you know, what they tried to do, and they wanted others there. I just think it's a new lease on life for me to really be able to do a couple more years of quality television and good college basketball before, you know, I kind of settle into my next gig, which, will be teaching. Taking a position at Columbia University as a lecturer in their sports management program and School of Professional Studies. So, and I'll still be doing games, hopefully, but, I've got all this institutional knowledge that, you know, it doesn't need to stay in my head. I should pass it on, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's cool. And that you'll be in New York, so we'll have to have you in sometime. And it's interesting to hear that. I got laid off from CBS for my full-time gig the day after, I think, those ESPN layoffs happened. So that week was brutal for not just ESPN but other companies, including CBS Radio with the merger with Entercom. A lot of people were let go, such as myself. So it's interesting to hear the foreign perspective. You obviously are very talented and got another opportunity, but there's people out there who still are on the prowl and still looking for that next chance from ESPN. So it is intriguing how many people they cut, and then months later they did another huge layoff, and to see where kind of the bricks fall for some of these people.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing we all have to understand is it is a business. It's a high-level corporate business. They're moved by the bottom line and nothing else. And, you know, no matter how many friendships you make, no matter how many relationships that you develop that you think are quality relationships, your existence is really dictated by the bottom line.
Len Elmore joining us on the Jake Brown Show. You are from New York City, correct?
Yes, I am. Born and raised.
What part of the city are you from?
I was born in Brooklyn, you know, lived in Bed-Stuy, East New York for a while, and then when my father got a city job, we moved to Queens and had our own home, you know, in South Jamaica, Springfield Gardens area.
Southside Jamaica, Queens. That's where everything goes down. I knew you had a little Brooklyn in you. My mom is from Brooklyn, Sheepshead Bay part. So Bed-Stuy. All right, Biggie's territory there in Bed-Stuy. Late 60s, early 70s, who was the best baller in New York City? Who was running the game in Rucker Park?
Oh, man, Joe Hammond. Joe Hammond and maybe Pee Wee Kirkland. They were in the late 60s, early 70s. Those two guys kind of ruled the roost. You know, you heard about helicopter knowings and Earl Manigault, but they were prior to that. You know, Joe Hammond's one of those guys that had extraordinary basketball feel and sense, but, you know, school wasn't for him. And at some point, you know, him being in his teens, you know, when in the Rucker, they would announce, say, our school, Powell Memorial, and this guy's from this. And they, you know, high school All-Americans, you know, Joe Hammond would be called All Mount Morris Park, which is where the Rucker was for a little while back in those days. And then in the Unlimited, the pro side, Pee Wee Kirkland, you know, he was the bad boy Walt Frazier.
Hmm.
You know, he somehow had his Rolls Royce and, you know, had his shark skin suits and all of that. The trappings, the problem was, you know, he was making his money in a different way, and he'll be the one to admit it and ultimately pay the price for it. But he could ball. There's no question about it. Those are some good days.
Who, like you, reached the NBA level, had some success, was the best baller from the city? I mean, Kenny Anderson comes to mind, obviously, from Queens. But do you have one name in particular who came out of the city who excelled in the NBA?
You know, I mean, there are a lot of guys. You're talking about before me, during
anytime, my period. Anytime.
Oh, I mean, when you look at, I mean, you look at the city. You can look at Roger Brown, Connie Hawkins.
Connie Hawkins, yeah. Rest in
peace. Connie Archibald. Man, there's a list. When New York was really New York reigned supreme as far as schoolyard players who went through the real traditional route of schoolyard and high school and then college and then the NBA. I could name a ton of guys that, you know, Fly Williams was, he had his taste in the NBA for a while. World Be Free. Julius wasn't from the city though. Julius was from Long Island.
Doesn't count.
The Rucker. Doesn't count. Okay. Who else? And then, you know, I had guys, my era, Kevin Joyce, Brian Winters had a long period. Brian Winters and I were teammates with the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, talking about some of the Catholic school guys, Tom Owens, John Roach, let me see. I tell you, a guy who played pretty good high school basketball, didn't go to college and had a tremendous pro career, but it wasn't basketball. It was baseball. John Candelaria, who was obviously a terrific pitcher for Pittsburgh Pirates.
We're getting a history lesson right now.
Yeah, I mean, there are guys, and I'm sure I left out a ton of guys, and I'm talking about after me. You named a bunch of guys after, you know, the Kenny Andersons, the Mark Jacksons of the world, people like that. But, you know, there were just so many guys. And for some reason, New York stopped being the Mecca. I think a lot of it had to do with socioeconomics, people moving out of the city to go to warmer places, places where they could be employed. The other element was, you know, the drug scourge, and so many quality people succumbed to, you know, to drugs. And, you know, then finally the education system in New York, where, you know, public schools just weren't on par and guys weren't prepared to go to college. And, you know, obviously that hurt, and you can see a ton of guys that lost out there. So,
And St. John's lost its prominence kind of, and I think that was the school everyone pointed to. If they were going to come to New York, they were going to play at St. John's, and once they kind of fell off the hill, it changed New York basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it happened, and, you know, it's interesting because in my junior year, I was going to go to St. John's.
Really?
And, you know, I was all set. John Kress, who was Lua Karnaseca's top assistant, he and I became really close. And, you know, Coach Karnaseca, we'd talk maybe once a week. I'd go up there and watch those guys, and I'd scrimmage a little bit. But then Coach decided to go and take the job with the New York Nets in the ABA, and had left a void. And, of course, Lefty and George Raveling and the whole staff, they swooped in and kind of turned my head. Not only was the attention that I got a letter or a call from them every single day. I got visits, and finally when I went down to Maryland and saw that campus, which was an idyllic campus, not too far from New York, certainly sandwiched between two big cities, even though it was in the South, you know, you couldn't help but say, you know, I want to go here. So, you know, St. John's, unfortunately, you know, they lost the momentum with me, and fortunately for me, Maryland was the best choice I could ever make.
Yeah, and it turned out pretty darn well, obviously, with the Terps. What do you think of the Terps this year? They've been a little bit of up and down season, 14-6. Do you expect them to get to the dance this year?
I think it's a long shot at this point. Look, they've got some quality players who can develop into extraordinary players, but they're young. They suffered through a ton of injuries, you know, lost, obviously, Jackson for the rest of the season. They lost their big man, Bender. Talking to Mark Turgeon today, you know, he told me that, you know, they also have had guys sick with flu and minor injuries. So they really haven't had the full complement of guys probably at any stretch of the time during the season. And so, you know, they're still looking for continuity. They're still looking for a team that's got chemistry. And, you know, they've had some good games. They made some mistakes, particularly in the Michigan game the other day. And Mark put some of it on himself because after they hit the shot, the go-ahead shot, they celebrated too much and they didn't really listen to instructions and the coach couldn't get their attention before they went back out on the floor. And ultimately, Michigan made him pay 3.4 seconds. And wound up getting a free throw and just pretty much at the buzzer almost. So, and then two free throws were able to put them ahead. But that's really the problem with Maryland at this point in time. Injuries to key guys, young, inexperienced, and the lack of full chemistry at this point. It's not to say that they can't recover going forward, but it's kind of going to be an uphill battle, 3-4 right now in the Big Ten.
Len Elmore joining us, former ABA and NBA big man and former Terp and now Fox Sports college basketball analyst. I know you got to go in a couple of minutes. JoJo White, Celtics legend, passed away on Tuesday. Yeah. Can you talk about memories you had with JoJo?
First of all, he was a class guy on and off the court. You know, really a great competitor, but just certainly a gentleman. And, you know, I had the great fortune of being able to sit and talk with him periodically. Not only during the time we played, but after our careers were over, both being members of the National Basketball Retired Players Association. At one point, I was chairman of the board and actually the executive director, and you know, had exposure to JoJo from that standpoint. And you know, he's just another one of those great guys from the old days, good people that you know, we're just losing too soon.
Last one for you. I hate to throw his name in an interview, but LeVar Ball. I wanted to get your reaction to him. Ooh. Yeah, that. I mean, Lonzo's dad. I mean, he's more famous than Lonzo these days. What do you think about him sending his kids to Lithuania? Do you think that'll work out? Do you see them ever getting to a major professional level somewhere at some point?
Look, I hope for his sake that it does work out because his relationship with his kids will be poisoned otherwise. Particularly, how do you take the youngest, a 16-year-old, out of school? First of all, you take him out of school and say you're going to homeschool him anyway. And now I don't know how much schooling he's getting, homeschooling, whatever, playing over in Lithuania.
None.
Yeah. You know, and then that's the bottom line. He literally has taken an education opportunity away from that young man and his other son as well. And I wish he'd, you know, he put the pressure on Lonzo, but Lonzo, I think, is going to be all right. Matter of fact, it might be the best thing that ever happened to Lonzo with his father on the other side of the world. but in the end, you know, that's the problem. I mean, this is all about him. The selfishness is unparalleled with regard to, you know, what this is all about. He's made it about himself and not about his kids. And, yes, he cloaks it in the guise of, you know, I'm trying to help my sons and everybody. But every single day he opens his mouth, it's self-promotion. And, you know, it's really not doing anybody any good. And, you know, I think that going to Lithuania was just trying to salvage a mess up created by him. And in the long run, you know, it's hopefully, I hope it's going to work out for his guys. Because if it's not, then I think that poisoned relationship between a son and father is going to emerge. And that's something nobody wishes on anyone.
Yeah, Len, I agree 100%. And I kind of hate myself for it, but I do watch the Ball in the Family show on Facebook. just because, I don't know, it's captivating. I don't know why. Because I guess there's the emotional side of it with his wife battling through a stroke and speaking with the family. There's parts of it I like, and I kind of want to punch myself in the face for the continuing to watch it every week. But it's it's amazing.
People are watching Kardashians do the same thing.
So, my. I'll never succumb to that level. Never. Len Elmore, appreciate you coming on, man. Sorry about the technical issues. Glad we could have you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.